We're here with the continuation of the Northampton Community Music Center podcast series. And it's my pleasure today to be speaking with George Owens, who has been working, I think, since it started on the what we call the Alzheimer's Project. And this is a project that brings music to Alzheimer's patients. And do I remember correctly that this all started with some kind of research experiment?
Yes, it did, Joe. The project was begun by a woman named Beverly Pickering, who was a concert pianist with a master's in music from Yale and a registered nurse throughout her career. She came to Jason Trotta, executive director at NCMC, in fall of 2006 with this idea to begin this research project. She had contacted Northampton Rehab and Nursing, which was a facility on Bridge Road in Northampton, and connected with Pamela Hamburg there, who was running the Alzheimer's and Dementia Unit, and put together this project to research the impact of music and the benefits of music for people living with Alzheimer's. Beverly had some thoughts and contacts and was able to put together a grant proposal working with Jason to the FAO Schwartz Family Foundation, who funded the initial part of that project. They began in January 2008 with a 20-week session with protocols and documentation following, I believe a half dozen residents very closely and recording responses and reactions to different musicians, different music, trying to follow any changes in their medication requirements, their attention span, and so on, to really put some research and some hard data into this.
Was this still on the facility on Bridge Road?
Yes, this was all at that facility, yep. So they had some success with that and presented that to the FAO Schwartz Foundation, and were able to get a subsequent grant to do a longer project extending, I don't recall how many more weeks, but quite a few more months with many more musicians coming in. I believe there were about 300 musicians involved.
Wow. Were they all people involved with the music center?
Not all of them. Some came from the community. Some teachers from the music center, some connections that Beverly had made.
Were you involved that early on?
Oh, I was. I played with a classical flute trio with a teacher from NCMC, Sue Currian. And we were performers in that program very early on. And again, at the conclusion of the second round of funding, I think we were one of the last performances and had also played a couple times in between.
So how many patients were involved in the study by the time in the second phase of it?
We continued to follow that, or she continued to follow that initial group of a half dozen. There may have been a few more. I think a few died during the course of that project, of course. But there was a much larger group they were watching also, just to track attention span, among other things, and watching that extend over the duration of the project from roughly 15 minutes on average to the full 45 minutes of some performances. I think another thing that Beverly noted was that when she would arrive to conduct one of these performances and introduce the performers and so on, that people began to recognize her and recognize that music was coming that day and asking her who they were bringing. And these were people who had previously not been as responsive or as aware of who was coming and going.
So you said there, initially they might start to nod off after 15 minutes, but eventually most of them just stayed alert the whole time. Is that what you mean?
Oh yeah, it was not just simply nodding off. It would be getting up or trying to get up from a wheelchair that had an alarm in it, or trying to wheel themselves out of the room, or beginning to speak and complaining and almost interrupting performances, but not really, because people kept going.
Okay. In hearing about this, I remembered that there's a phenomenon among Alzheimer's patients called sundowning that this music helped to address. Could you describe that a little bit?
Certainly. It's a phenomenon where people living with Alzheimer's tend to experience more confusion late in the afternoon around the time of sundown. It relates to biological clocks and a lifetime of living a schedule where you wind down towards the end of the workday. And specifically for that reason, performances were scheduled to take place at 3:30 usually in that initial project. Later, as we expanded to a couple of other facilities, the time expanded a bit.
Was Beverly just like managing the performances during the course of this experiment that was, or the course of the research that was financed by the FAO Schwartz Foundation, or was she involved after that as well?
Well, throughout that, in those initial performances, Beverly, who was quite an accomplished pianist, would open and close each session. So there was some consistency and kind of cueing for people. So she would play the Star Spangled Banner and people began to sing along as they could. And she would play a closing number, usually We'll Meet Again. She had several interns who worked with her from Smith College who were working in neuroscience, who helped to document the performances and track behaviors and so on. At the conclusion of the second grant, as I said, my group was performing there in one of the last weeks. And Beverly was saying to us that she needed to document what they had done, that the FAO Schwartz Family Foundation wanted some kind of concluding document and handbook, really, to sum up what had been done. So we thought about that for a while, and that related very much to the kind of work I had done throughout my career with consulting and training, mainly for corporate clients, and documentation. So I got involved at that point in helping her with that. We wrote another grant to the Schwartz Family Foundation to cover the development of that handbook. And what we decided, working with Jason and with Pamela, was to produce a handbook for other community music schools to help them implement similar projects based on our experience. And so we labored, I think, for a year to do that. There was so much documentation, and obviously everyone had other commitments, but it was Beverly, me, Jason, and Pamela Hamburg working to develop that handbook. We produced that. It's available from the NCMC website on the link for the Alzheimer's program.
Do you know if other music centers have taken this up and started their own programs?
Jason did hear from a couple, and he did presentations through the National Guild for Arts Education, I believe. Both regionally and nationally about the program, and heard back from a couple of music schools who did, and he would have more information on follow up on that. The handbook provided lots of background and help and forms and suggestions, and was about 120 pages. And the foundation paid for us to have that bound and printed. I believe we printed 500 copies and mailed them to every community music in the National Guild.
That's really interesting. So once this whole thing was over, is that when you started arranging for the performances?
Yeah, Beverly unfortunately passed in February of 2011, so 10 years ago last month. And at that point we had published the book, and the program languished for a couple of years. And there was some involvement from a graduate student who was an intern at NCMC, who worked with Jason to begin it again at a new facility, Linda Manor, a skilled nursing facility in Leeds, Massachusetts.
Now, the original facility is not open anymore, right?
No, it closed also in 2011.
Right.
That building, they had many problems there.
Yeah.
It's actually been sitting empty now for 10 years. And I read just the other day, the facility's up for auction. I think 2013 or possibly early 2014, the program began again at Linda Manor. That graduate student moved on, and a voice teacher who came to NCMC for a year or two, Maki Matsui, picked it up, and I got involved again then, working with her to help at Linda Manor. And we also expanded to include Carawan, which at the time was Calvin Coolidge Rehabilitation and Nursing.
Okay. So could you describe what happens when musicians come in for a performance?
Absolutely. We typically have musicians come to both Carawan and Linda Manor on the same day. And perform for half an hour. The Carawan performance usually takes place at 3 o'clock, so 3 to 3:30. Then we move right up the road to Linda Manor and begin again at 4 o'clock and go to 4:30.
Uh-huh.
The cast of characters, the musicians who come in, has expanded quite a bit. I took over running it full time at the beginning of 2015, and we were going great guns right up until first week of March last year, 2020, when obviously the pandemic shut us down.
Right.
So what typically happens is that the musicians show up. I'm normally there for most of the performances, introduce them, MC a little if I need to, and get things rolling, and the musicians take it from there. People living at these facilities have become very accustomed to having the musicians come in. They're always happy to see NCMC, Northampton Community Music Center, on the schedule, as are the staff. Staff love it as least as much as the residents.
Uh-huh. So how many musicians are usually there for performances?
That ranges from solo performers, individual singers or solo flute or guitarist, singer. We had one guy who was very popular who would come in and play steel drums. He was a student in Hampshire College who moved along. They loved him. The largest group I've had there was 34 singers from the UMass Men's Music Fraternity Choir, who came a couple of times, very organized in their coats and ties and filing in, and it was wonderful.
Wow. I'm surprised you had room for that many.
Yeah, they were very organized and came right into their rows. They knew what they were doing, and it worked wonderfully. I've also had a 17-piece brass band come into Linda Manor. We did not have room for that at Carawan, but they've been back multiple times, and people love them, too. They have a Mardi Gras every year.
My wife and I have also participated in this as a trio with a mandolin and guitar, but it seemed like usually your audiences were not, some of your audiences were not as big as those bands were. How many people are usually there to listen?
That varies. The group at Carawan, which is a slightly smaller facility, tends to be smaller. They've changed their approach several times over the years between having a dedicated memory unit, which they had for a year or two and then decided they would not do, and integrated those residents in with others. Linda Manor has a larger dedicated memory unit. So we would, at Carawan, there could be as few as 10 or 12 in the audience, up to probably 20, 25. Linda Manor, we've had as many as, probably 40 to 50 in the audience, because oftentimes there are family members there too visiting, especially during holiday times.
Right. What different genres of music are represented?
Oh my goodness. Anything from classical to Americana to show tunes to rock and roll. There's one very popular vocal trio that comes in that does a lot of rock and roll from the 50s, 60s, even early 70s.
Uh-huh.
That's a very popular trio, and they're some of our great regulars, as are you and Barbara and your trio.
So are there some genres that the residents like better than others?
It really varies with with the individual residents, because the age of people living with Alzheimer's can range so much from people with early onset to those who are quite elderly, and well into their 90s. And I recall one resident who was 102, who just loved music. Uh-huh. And it really ties into what people have linked to at a certain period of their life, it seems. Late teens, early 20s, whatever was really meaningful and popular and significant to them at that point.
Uh-huh. Sometimes music from that era would get more of a response than other music would.
Quite often, but because there was such an age range within the audience, you could have people in their 70s, have people in their 90s, and the music that connected with them would be quite different.
Right, right.
So what we've often encouraged people to do is to include a range of pieces, if they can, from different times.
Right.
Within their program.
Can you describe audience reactions to the music?
Oh, sure. Lots of smiles, lots of movement. I've seen quite a few residents who might have seemed unresponsive or non-responsive, sitting in their wheelchairs and beginning to conduct, beginning to wave a hand in time with the music, beginning to move their feet as if they were dancing, tap their feet, sing along, recalling words that have surfaced from long ago.
Uh-huh. Since you are host so often, do you get to recognize the residents and actually maybe see some progress over time with them?
Absolutely. I get to recognize them. I get to know them. They get to recognize me. We greet each other when I come in. That's been honestly a difficulty this past year, and being
right
unable to go in there at all. And I know that Care One was hit very hard by the pandemic, and many residents. And as far as seeing progress over time, difficult to say. And in all honesty, I'm not in there every day. It's separated week to week, sometimes a few weeks in between. And there's the progression of the disease too, which is inevitable.
Right. So. Are there individual sessions that are particularly memorable to you?
The brass band I mentioned, a band named Prone to Mischief, which is a...
All right, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, it's a street band, lots of New Orleans style raucous music and dancing around, and they've been in multiple times.
Uh-huh.
It's songs that people recognize. It's loud. Many of the people have some degree of hearing impairment.
Right.
So it gets through, and it's party music, and there's just lots of smiles and lots of dancing on the parts of the staff too.
Uh-huh.
They love it, and that carries through to the audience. Other meaningful performances, the steel drum guy I mentioned. They do love those mandolins too, Joe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll come back again someday when we're able to. And is there a particular, do you remember any times when there was a particular audience reaction or a reaction of an individual member of the audience that stand out in your memory?
Yeah, let me talk about another one. Mary Ellen Miller, who teaches or has taught at NCMC, is a wonderful clarinetist. She's also a shakuhachi player.
Uh-huh.
Who lived and studied in Japan for several years. And she has been to both facilities several times to play solo shakuhachi, the Japanese enbolon flute. Very meditative. And she introduces the music and talks about the purpose and the effect of the music. And I wasn't sure the first time how the residents would respond to something that was so distant from what many or most had probably experienced at that time we talked about when they were 19, 20, 21. But that music just had an amazing, calming, kind of restorative effect on residents. And you could just see, because there are some times when we come in to perform when it's a tough day at the unit or in the facility, and people for one reason or another, whether it's one of their compatriots has passed or who knows. There's some days when things are just quite unsettled. People are quite upset and there's a lot of discord. And it's amazing to see how music, especially something like the shakuhachi, can just settle people down and calm things. And that's been extraordinary to watch.
Uh-huh. What kind of feedback do you get from the staff?
When can you come again?
Uh-huh.
How soon can we get more music?
Right.
And I'm beginning conversations now to try to figure out if, how, and when, and under what conditions we might be able to begin again. So I'm very, very glad that you suggested this conversation, because it provides an opportunity to get the word out and help to begin people thinking about coming back and how we can do it. And there are several ways we're exploring being able to do that safely, whether inside or outside the facility as the weather improves, and investigating the movement with the driveway choirs and being able to position ourselves outside and broadcast inside to FM radios and other technology.
Uh-huh.
These solutions we might be able to use.
Speaking of technology, that reminds me, I think there was another aspect to the program of doing individual programming for people to have in their rooms.
Right.
Is that still going on?
No, that we did not. We were not able to continue with that.
Could you talk about it just a little bit?
Absolutely. Anyway? There was a documentary that came out in 2014 called Alive Inside, which documented a project that was begun in New York City to provide residents of memory units, specifically people with Alzheimer's, with individual music players, iPods and the like, and headphones, to provide music that's specifically related to their history and their interests, and to look at the impact. The documentary was amazing in what it showed, and I highly recommend that people watch it. I believe it went on to Netflix several years ago, and I believe it's still on Netflix. But if you Google Alive Inside, you can find links and more information about that. That gave birth to a national program called Music and Memory, working to provide these music players to organizations. We worked to try to do that at Linda Manor and Carawan. The management of the players, without providing any extra support to staff at these facilities, was just beyond the scope of what we could handle on an all-volunteer basis. There was not a lot of grant money we could locate to support that. We did get a little bit to buy some of the hardware, inexpensive players and headphones and so on. And we had several interns who worked with us on that who moved along after their time at the local colleges. Certainly it's something worth considering. There is a heavy management component to it, because you're individualizing for people. You have to make sure that where the units are, where the players are, where they're charged, how you manage the inventory of headphones, and how you personalize the players.
The other performances, those are all totally volunteer though, right?
They are. And we've had such great support from NCMC and really from the broader community too. I've got some numbers here because I keep things documented. And over the 5 years from beginning of 2015 through the end of 2019, let's see, we were averaging 55 performances a year across both facilities. And let's see, total musician visits. So across that was 796. So roughly 100 to 150 musicians a year.
Out of these musicians, how many of them were associated with the Music Center, either staff or students?
Over that time, honestly, 15 to 20%.
So it's more musicians in the community that are doing this just to, as a volunteer thing.
That's the way it's evolved over time. Part of that is because I'm a musician in the community. Have been for many years and know a lot of musicians who I can pester and invite. And there are faithful, loyal return visitors like Mando Paradiso and Tuesday Afternoon Singers and the Prone to Mischief Brass Band and several of those I've already mentioned. Just come back again and again.
Okay. We are almost out of time. But before we go, when this session started, there was a musical introduction from a quartet of which you are a member called Pax Sax. And then there's going to be a little bit more as we go out. So why don't you just tell us briefly about your group that that you played with?
Okay, that Sax Quartet. I started that 5 or 6 years ago with several local professionals, John Weeks, Cliff White, and now Dave Trenholm, one of the new worker owners of Downtown Sounds. Great players, and I'm very privileged to be able to play with them. We have played numerous times at both facilities, and it's been very popular. And again, we're loud enough for people to hear, and we play a varied program.
Yep. So,
I would like to just say a couple things, Joe. Now, first, thanks to you for initiating this conversation. Thanks to all the musicians who've participated. And please, please get in touch as we ramp up again and begin this again. There's information about the project on the NCMC website under Programs and Services. You can also download the complete handbook that we developed for community music schools around the country. If you care to look at that, it's got a lot of good information and a bibliography about music and the brain and the beneficial impacts on memory of music. So avail yourself of those resources.
Right. Well, music is very powerful, and this program is certainly a testament to that. And George, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about it. And we're looking forward to the day when you can get back in there.
No, so am I. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.